The World Tomorrow. Ambassador College presents Garner Ted Armstrong, bringing you the plain truth about today's world news and the prophecies of the world tomorrow.
And greetings, friends around the world. This is Garner Ted Armstrong with the good news of the world tomorrow. Dr. Max Rafferty, who is superintendent of California Public Schools, wrote, "There's a trend running like a river underground, and I don't like it. In a time when our national morals are at a record low, when our crime and juvenile delinquency rates have become objects of shuddering horror to the rest of the world, we need moral and spiritual values in our schools, and more of them, not fewer." But why moral and spiritual values, people are asking today, and on what are moral and spiritual values based? People today are embarked on a sort of a desperate search for thrills and spills, chills and pleasures as never before, and one of the funniest things to most people is to scoff at almost anything standing for morality, integrity, honesty, or true spirituality. And the Elmer Gantries of the world have made Bible-thumping fundamentalism look ridiculous, and the austere formalism of many religionists has made others feel religion has nothing to do with today's frantic world of space-age problems. So why morality? Why kid ourselves? People say, "I want to get mine today while the getting is good." And why bother with any morality or any standards of conduct imposed upon us by other people? And in the headlong rush toward immorality, cloaked in a tuxedo called new morality, are American and British teenagers. And they say, with the same old catchphrase and the sort of a cliquish word they have today about it, "Well, I think you ought to be able to be free to do whatever you would like to do, so long as it doesn't hurt someone else." This is what they're saying constantly today. "So long as it doesn't hurt anyone, I feel I should be free to do just whatever I want." So, like a pair of little boys caught fighting at school, the one says yes, but the other one started it first. Or like the crook who, when caught, exposes his partner in crime and says, "If I'm going to suffer, you're going to suffer with me." They call it situation ethics, but that's only a real fine-sounding phrase for the same old excuse of a wrong plus a wrong makes a right. That if you sin first, I ought to be able to sin because you did it, and it looks to me like you should have enjoyed at least a part of it. And people aren't convinced that sin is not enjoyable. People aren't convinced in the first place about this word sin, about whether there is such a word as sin, about whether it's important to find out whether there is anybody who would tell you what is sin, because most people are convinced you can't prove there is a God, that there isn't any ultimate source, any final authority who would tell you what is right and what is wrong, or what is moral and what is immoral, what is ethical and what is unethical. And that the whole head of the tribe of people who are trying to break down morality are some of the leading theologians of the day and some of the leading professors in leading educational institutions. They're trying to tell you, you can't know, there are no values, there isn't any positive truth here or there. You can't go to some book and find a paragraph marked with a magical X that tells you this is right and the other is wrong. And they call it situation ethics. Leading ministers are telling people today that it might be infinitely more moral to live in adultery than it would be to live in a legitimate marriage. And they're even making homosexuality legal in some countries. It's fantastic. People are so afraid of their own identity, they're even trying to change sexes by wearing clothes that pertain to the opposite sex. They really don't know where they're going. So the real cry today is, let's go into immorality and call it new morality. Let's call it situation ethics. And today's trend of rejection of everything called moral, the shifting, changing, deteriorating values that people are seeming to claim as their own today are all based on this idea of situation ethics. And that's not so new as it may sound. It's as ancient as Adam and Eve. It's as ancient as when Cain killed Abel. It's the old idea that if you do it to me, I ought to be able to do it to you. And right depends on the outcome and the rewards and the benefits, not on whether or not someone else calls it right. It's about time you began to find out for yourself whether or not there are any absolutes, and whether there is an ultimate source to which you can go to find out what is moral and what is immoral. And after all, doesn't it depend on what it buys for you? On the rewards to you? On the outcome for you personally? I'm not talking about morality as to what is acceptable to the majority. That apparently is not too important to most people today anyhow. because certainly most people are on the bandwagon of doing anything and everything you possibly can to make the majority think you are the minority, and it's becoming very popular to become a member of the minority. It's funny how in Great Britain the teenagers wanted to jump on the bandwagon of leather jackets and jack boots or high-heeled pointed-toed boots of some type or another, and long hair, and maybe even ladies' handbags. And I think some of them, I mean men, at least I think they're men, I'm not quite sure. Maybe they're boys, maybe they're girls, you can't tell at first glance. They're even wearing lipstick, and now they're changing clothes completely to wear, of all things, I saw a clipping, a picture of, apparently, at least it said underneath the picture, that the thing standing there in a skirt was a boy with long hair in a skirt, and this other thing standing there in trousers was a girl. I couldn't prove it, of course. And then there's the new see-through look. There's the topless bar, and I've heard of some called the bottomless bar, and now they've got the see-through look, which means wearing transparent plastic. It makes you wonder, why don't they just go join a nudist colony and have it over with? Because then they're not going to be able to kid anybody about what they are. It's a funny world, isn't it? People want to descend into every kind of a weird, perverted, backward and upside-down way of living, and then, as if to excuse it, call it new morality. There's nothing new about that. That's as ancient as you can get. The original nudist colony was in the Garden of Eden, except it was awfully private there. Adam and Eve had the ultimate privacy of all. You can't get any more private. They were just like being not only in their own private bedroom at home as a married couple, but there just weren't any other human beings, not even any children around, and so they weren't really in a nudist colony. But if we think it's new for people to start taking their clothes off, we'd better look again. It began that way, and people began putting them on. And now they're going back in the other direction. But they like to excuse it by a nice, new-sounding phrase called new morality, or a new cat's word called situation ethics. And situation ethics is merely an excuse invented by certain theologians who simply are embarrassed by what they find in the Bible. They're assailed by all kinds of hidden doubts. And so it seems like the biggest attack toward morality and against the Bible, against God, against the Ten Commandments, against any and everything that Jesus Christ ever stood for, is on the part of those who have gone to theological institutions to learn, apparently, about the Bible. Isn't that ironical that instead of a lot of atheists attacking the Bible, it seems to be the biblical scholars who are attacking the Bible today? Well, have you ever looked into it for yourself, or are you destined, like the average layman, to just listen as if as a spectator at a giant sports event to all of the hue and cry at both sides and extremes? Are you only destined to read what you can in the newspapers and hear what people have to say about it, and then take your pick as to which man you would like to follow? A certain number are going to tell you God is dead, and others are going to get on the television, or perhaps be heard over the radio, or perhaps you'll read their observations in the weekly church page of the newspaper, and they're going to tell you God is anything but dead, he's very much alive. And then they're going to tell you what they think that God is like, and what he looks like, and where he is. Well, who are you going to believe? Take your pick, because none of them seem to offer any proof. Meanwhile, those who want to live in ultimate licentiousness, those who would like life to be one gigantic orgy and to have to pay no penalties and to have no consequences, are calling their way of living situation ethics. And they're basing it upon some of the statements of religionists themselves. For instance, in the Kingston Whig Standard not so long ago, there was a report on a Rotary Club meeting in which a young minister had addressed the people there and told them that there is a lot of overstatement in the Old Testament, and warned them not to take the Bible literally, because this would be the height of insanity. This would get you into no end of problems to take the Bible literally. He told them you'd be in trouble all the way, to use his own words, if you took the Bible literally. Now, they say if you're going to read James Bond, take it literally. If you're going to go to the movie, enjoy it. Take it at face value, just exactly what they're trying to get across. But the one book of all, apparently, that you're not supposed to take literally, I mean you're to pay less attention to this than you would Shakespeare, is the Bible. I remember in English class, when I was a very young boy, the teacher wanted me to analyze why it was Hamlet said what he did. And I wrote on the paper that Hamlet never lived, and that if there were any words on a book that said Hamlet said something, it was because a man who apparently had died in rather questionable circumstances, and people weren't too terribly convinced about his ultimate sanity anyhow, had put down some words on paper long ago, which the whole English-speaking world had long since subscribed to and said that they thought he was an excellent poet and playwright and so on. And I wasn't about to sit there and analyze why a fictitious character who never drew breath had said something. I doubt, however, if I could have possibly put it quite that way. But that's what I felt about it. I got a horrible grade. But, you know, people take Shakespeare just that literally. There are students of Shakespeare. There are people who are Shakespeare buffs. They sit around and they memorize Shakespeare. They can quote far more of Shakespeare than a lot of ministers can quote the Bible. There are other people who are Civil War buffs. They like to attend Civil War parties and dress up in uniforms and make pretenses of blasting each other into cannon fodder. And they live and relive the war. And they like to hear the snort of horses and the sound of cannon and the clop of horses' hoofs. And they like to hear all of the clicking of the men's rifles as they belly down in the lush green fields of Kentucky or somewhere in the eastern seaboard of the United States and reenact a Civil War battle. And they sit around to this day and read all the history they can possibly lay hands on and relive the war. Now, apparently they'd like to have a new one come along every 30 or 40 years so they can even take part in it. It's funny how people will memorize and take as gigantically important some of the most irrelevant things to life. But when it comes to the Bible, they will lift up holy hands of horror at anyone who would dare to take the Bible seriously, who would dare to take it literally. Now, in London, you will attract more attention by far if you would be seen walking about Piccadilly Circus with a Bible under your arm than you would in leather high-heeled boots, a leather jacket, and long hair. I can guarantee you, people will walk by as if you're just a normal man about town. If you got long hair, they won't even laugh at you anymore. But if you were carrying a Bible, I don't know what kind of hoots and jeers you would hear. Try it sometime if you want to prove it to yourself. Yet here is a man who is supposed to know. And I think any superintendent of public schools who looks at the trend of youth today, who was worried about LSD and worried about drug addiction of other forms, who was worried about the rising crime in the United States or in Great Britain or Australia or take your pick, any nation, and says he's quite concerned about the crime and juvenile delinquency rates, which have become objects of shuddering to the rest of the world, and says we today need more moral values and spiritual values in our schools, not fewer. Well, you can disagree with Dr. Rafferty if you would like. But we're not so dumb and so out of touch with reality but that we cannot see the relationship between cause and effect. That we cannot see the breakdown in the home, the losing of the identity of the masculine father, the idea that God is dead, and all of the concerted attempt to break down any and everything that stands for morality and ethics and law and order and that stand for the codes and the conduct that used to give us some sort of a way by which we ought to live. And if we can't relate that to the increase in crime and to the frustrations and fears of an enervated, jaded youth that doesn't know where it's going, then we are a little bit dumb and a little bit out of touch with reality, all right? Now this minister that tells you you can't take the Bible literally is only one of many thousands. He said the Bible is a book of religion. Aiding this revelation are such literary devices as exaggeration and caricature. He also referred to the device called myth as illustrated in the story of creation, the story of Adam and Eve. And he calls that a myth. Now, another man who is a University of British Columbia professor said there is nothing in the Bible that proves God exists. Well, I'll take exception to that simply because there were plenty of statements in the Bible that had to do with prophecies involving many cities which did exist but which don't today, prophecies involving a whole race of people that said they would become a completely dispersed and scattered people who would never again have a native prince to rule over them, would lose all of their national power and importance, and yet were the greatest race of people, the greatest builders, the greatest educators, the greatest writers. They were the greatest culture on the face of this earth a few centuries back. And yet the Bible said that would occur to them. It did, it has, and it still is. And yet this professor, who is not a professor of religion, just a professor of something else, said that when he reads the Bible, it seems to him just what you'd expect in the sacred writings of a primitive people. Now, he ought to stick to history instead of the Bible, because historians are, by reason of being historians, forced to look at the Bible from a totally different point of view than a theologian, which they will admit to you personally. And he said when he reads the Bible, he sees tribal history, somewhat arrogant pseudoscience, moral exhortation, folk wisdom. And it is liberally spiced, he said, with miracles and marvels. And then he said, theologians explain God by filling in the gaps of scientific explanations. He said after a certain point, theologians just say, well, that's the way it is. We can't really understand because of the feebleness of the human mind. Really, God's purposes and God's nature are an impenetrable mystery, said the professor. A system of explanation which loses itself in a mystery isn't a very good system of explanation. That's very true. But there's nothing mysterious about the Bible when you read it for what it says. There's nothing mysterious about the plain statements of Almighty God in the Bible concerning prophecies being fulfilled right now today. There was nothing mysterious at all about Christ when he said, think not I am come to destroy the law or the prophets. I am not come to destroy, but to fulfill. Nothing mysterious about the statement of Peter that said Jesus Christ set us an example that we ought to follow in his steps. Nothing mysterious at all about the Ten Commandments that say you shall have no other gods before you. They tell you not to make any graven images, any likeness of anything that is on this earth, or anything your hands manufactured, to which you would bow down or give obeisance or lip service, or which would get between you and the real God. No mysterious thing at all in the statement, thou shalt not commit adultery. There isn't anything mysterious about the statement, thou shalt do no murder, thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not kill. But we have watered that down, and we say, well, you shouldn't kill unless you have a reason. You shouldn't commit adultery unless you're in love. You shouldn't have another God before you unless the one you can create in your own image is a little more comforting than the one you find revealed in the Bible. And people call this situation ethics and new morality. Do it to others before they do it unto you. No wonder people are airing hidden doubts. They never did have any faith in the first place. I turn to the Bible in the chapter about faith, which is Hebrews 11, and it says there, faith is the evidence of things not seen. It says faith is evidence, not guesswork. And it also talks about knowing whether or not you have faith by works, and that faith is evidenced and made clear by the works that go along with it. And the Bible says, prove me now herewith concerning God's practices that he reveals to man about his own finances. Certain financial obligations God lays upon man. He says, prove me now herewith. Try me, test me. Find out if I'll do exactly what I say. The Bible says, prove all things. Hold fast that which is good. In 1 Thessalonians 5:21, the Apostle Paul wrote that. He urges you to prove it. Isaiah said to the law, that's the Old Testament, and the testimony, that's the New, if they speak not according to this word, it is because there is no light in them. The Bible says, prove me, check back and forth, take any subject and look through the Bible and find out if you can prove it. Theologians say you can't prove it. Somebody's confused. Who is it? In the book of Isaiah, God says, if it is God, or if it is a human being who is talking, and an uninspired man at that, in verse 12 of the 40th chapter, who has measured the waters in the hollow of his hand and meted out heaven with a span and comprehended the dust of the earth in a measure and weighed the mountains in scales and the hills in a balance? Who has directed the spirit of the eternal, or being his counselor, has taught him? With whom took he counsel and who instructed him and taught him in the path of judgment and taught him knowledge and showed to him the way of understanding? Verse 15, he said, behold, the nations are as a drop of a bucket, and are counted as the small dust of the balance. Behold, he takes up the isles as a very little thing, and leaven, and is not sufficient to burn, nor the beast thereof sufficient for a burnt offering. All nations, someone said, and it sounds quite presumptuous if it's only a man who is saying it, all nations before him are as nothing, and they are counted to him less than nothing, and vanity. To whom then will you liken God, or what likeness will you compare unto him? He says the workman melts a graven image and talks then how an artisan will put together a metal totem pole and bow down to it and say, you gave me breath, you are my God. Verse 21, he said, have you not known, have you not heard, it has not been told you from the beginning, have you not understood from the foundations of the earth? It is he that sits upon the circle of the earth, the inhabitants thereof are as grasshoppers, that stretches out the heavens as a curtain and spreads them out as a tent to dwell in, that brings the princes to nothing, he makes the judges of the earth as vanity. And in verse 25, to whom then will you liken me, or shall I be equal, says the Holy One? Lift up your eyes on high, and behold who has created these things. Now that's a good one for you. Most people couldn't tell you how to put together a telephone switchboard. The average person can't analyze water, can't tell you what makes lightning, can't tell you what electricity is, can't tell you what's behind the switch on his wall, can't tell you the difference between AC and DC, and the difference between any type of electricity in another, can't tell you an ohm from a watt, and doesn't know the difference between a transistor or a resistor. And yet we think there isn't any God. We're all affixed to this earth by gravity. We use very modern methods in building a modern building. We get up on about the third floor and hang a piece of string with a weight on it to find out if the wall is straight. And yet we say there is no God. We're bound to this earth by law. We walk about it by law. We eat our food which comes out of the ground. We take a little seed, we stick it in a piece of mud, and we hope that that little seed has enough of an indelible pattern stamped in it that is going to put down little tentacles we call roots and tubules, and then through a stem begin to produce a fruit out of that mud that we can stick in our mouths and become a part of us, so that we, who are only mud, can go on living a little longer. We're of this earth, and to this earth we're going back again. We can't explain the air that we breathe and the water that appears in three forms and this body we've been given and the marvelous mind of man that is so capable of thought it can even come up with a fantastic idea that it didn't have a maker. And we call that new? We call that intellectuality? Today, people are saying there are no values you can depend upon. They say you can't know anything for sure. Now, as I said earlier, we're not so dumb that we can't relate cause and effect. And this toboggan slide into so-called new morality is reaping a fantastic reward, all right. Multiple millions of broken homes, multiple millions of wretched, homeless little children who have to take a name from the state or the county institution for wayward children who have never heard the voice of their mother or father. But the youngsters who engendered those children say, well, it's all right as long as nobody gets hurt. Nobody gets hurt, that's kind of a hollow echo, isn't it? When thousands and millions are being hurt, when homes are being hurt, when nations are being hurt, and when the entirety of this world is being hurt, because it seems we want to play while the world burns and we're going to have to pay the piper if we want to continue it. It's about time you took a good long look at some of the absolutes you can prove to yourself. Why don't you write for this book that Does God Exist, and the one entitled The Proof of the Bible, and find out whether or not these prophecies I've mentioned are being fulfilled right now today. And if you want to find out whether or not there is a living God, then get your name on the mailing list of the Plain Truth magazine and write for our booklet on the resurrection and find out if Jesus Christ is alive today. By irrefutable proofs, there are irrefutable, absolute proofs that Jesus Christ of Nazareth walked out of his tomb. And absolute proofs about his birth. No myth to it, and you can prove it to yourself. Now, you can have a big laugh out of that, but if you're a spiritual coward, you're going to laugh and then not write for it. If you're not afraid you might find out there is some truth to it, then write in for these booklets and articles. The Plain Truth magazine is absolutely free of charge. It's 52 pages, full color. No advertising, no request for money, no follow-up, and no one's going to call on you. And your name is guarded very carefully in our IBM files. It is not given to someone else. Request the Plain Truth magazine. Also the booklets, Does God Exist?, The Proof of the Bible, all of the facts on the resurrection. Now, another major help that I can offer you, and all of these are absolutely free, by the way, and there's no advertising in them, and there's nothing else that is going to come. No one's going to call on you. No bill to ever follow. And another major and important tool you can use not only as a family but as husband and wife together and in training your children is the one on the Plain Truth about child rearing. Showing you how to be a family unit, showing you how to rear children and why. And it's a handbook that you can keep referring to time and time again. It's a condensation of a thesis on the subject after years of research and study in child psychology. It's a boiled-down thesis in one little booklet that is only about 100 pages long or so that you can read in one sitting, and yet you'll want to refer to it time and time again. It answers all kinds of questions. Should you punish children? Is corporal punishment right or wrong? What did the child psychologist say about it? How do you get a child to come when he's called? How do you get him to be quiet? How do you get his mind to be normal and stable? How do you prevent injury and accident? How do you take care of a child? What about if dad is punishing the child and mom disagrees, then what? All kinds of questions answered about day-to-day conditions involving homes, families, and children. In this booklet on the plain truth about child rearing. And it's free of charge, there's no price for it. It'll be a good help to you if you want to put into practice these principles I'm talking about. And we will send it to you by return mail, absolutely free of charge, as soon as we get your request for it. And you can jot down the mailing address, which I will give you in a few more minutes at the close of this program. Now remember that the first major method by which you can guarantee an absence of mental aberrations, fears, and worries is to have real, solid, authoritative religious principles in your home. And you will only have those by proving to yourself accurately and positively and scientifically that God does exist, and you know He exists, that He is the one who inspired the Bible, and you can believe in it and follow it and practice it. And secondly, to get moral and stay that way. Learn to love moral principles, practice them, and live by them. Why? Why, because there are such wonderful rewards for it, and because it will pay off for your children and solve about 90% of a lot of your problems. There are other problems that can be solved, too. You just can't believe to begin the happiness that can be yours if you're willing to turn around and go the other way, to repent of the way you have been living, and to decide with God's help you're going to live differently, and to live by His laws and with His laws protecting you, instead of thinking you're hostile toward the very principles that are going to give you everything out of life you want. Now, there's a booklet before me right here that will explain to you the entire present world turmoil, escalating wars and contentions, all of the problems confronting mankind step by step, and yet will go right on beyond to tell you from the prophecies from the book of Genesis to Revelation, many of them, exactly what kind of a world it is going to be, how one world government is possible. In this booklet is a complete picture about controlled weather, and instead of artificial organs, the direct methods by which people will have their own healed, and how whole human lives and patterns of lives are going to be changed. Agrarian reform, weather reform, linguistic reform, calendar reform, economic reform, every great reform that every great movement has tried to enact is right here in this booklet. Not asking you to jump on the bandwagon and support something at all, just telling you what's going to be done regardless as to whether you believe it. But here's the proof. It's available. You can check up. You can read it in one sitting. And it's quite an eye-opener. It's entitled, the same as this program, The Wonderful World Tomorrow, What It Will Be Like. How a Utopian World-Ruling Government Will Come. The Real Solutions to the Ills of Mankind. The Wonderful World Tomorrow, What It Will Be Like is the title of this book. It's free of charge, no price for it at all, and we're not going to call on you. No one's going to request any money, and there is no bill to follow. Just write to Herbert W. Armstrong, Box 111, Pasadena, California. That's Herbert W. Armstrong, Box 111, Pasadena, California, for this free booklet. Until next time, this is Garner Ted Armstrong saying goodbye, friends.
You have heard The World Tomorrow. Send your letters to Herbert W. Armstrong, Post Office Box 111, Pasadena, California.